Hello and welcome to the second episode of Null Signal Station podcast, a podcast from Null Signal Games. My name is Ginevra. The pronouns I would use is preferably they, but also she is fine. And I am joined today by...
Hey, it's Sanjay. I use he, him pronouns. It's nice to have you here today. Ginevra, what do we have going on today?
Well, we're recording this a teeny bit before Scoops Week or preview season or whatever you would like to call it. But when this is published, it will be right in the middle of Scoops Week. And we do definitely have five cards to show off in this podcast and an interview with Davidus or David from the dev team to go to explain the cards and their development process. We're getting to the interview in just a few moments. I was wanting to ask you, Sanjay, what from the point of view of someone who's within Null Signal Games, what is Scoops Week or preview season like for you?
So I'm in a little bit of a minority in terms of my experience of the Scoop season, because in the marketing department, it's not as busy of a time relatively to my colleagues in every other department in Null Signal Games. So for me, it's a little bit closer to, I suppose, the average Netrunner enjoyer's experience, where I'm just very excited because I know people have been putting in a lot of work. And I'm also in the position where I haven't seen most of the cards. I haven't seen the cards that we're going to be spoiling today. I probably have more of an insight into what the mechanics are going to be than probably the average person. But I'm excited to see what's coming up in the next set. How about you, Ginevra?
So I can see this kind of a variety of feelings about preview season within Null Signal Games. Like, I know, like, I appreciate for some people, it's like putting all of their work out in public, and like the feedback they receive is actually kind of, because Null Signal Games is largely unpaid, that's what they kind of are doing it all for, is to see the community reaction, which of course can be varied community reaction. For other people within Null Signal Games, and also a bit for me because I'm a GLC modmin, like there's a sudden explosion of work because like everyone is talking about everything everywhere. There's so many things, like so many people wanting to talk about everything all suddenly. So it's quite a busy thing. There's also like finishing touches to, because I'm on the narrative team, finishing touches to stories. I think they're largely done. But there's like always, oh, did I make a mistake? Is there something wrong? Like slight nervousness. But like most of the things, well, if I have, we'll see. Not much I can do about some of the things now. But yeah, very excited still to see what happens. And although I have seen the cards, I can tell you about the artworks quite vividly. I cannot tell you about the mechanics or what the card says. I'm sorry. Like, that just blanks until I start using the cards for real.
Yeah, well, it is lucky that we have, for this episode, a expert in what the cards say.
Yes, I'm sure you're eager to hear from him, so let's get right to that.
Hello, welcome to the interview segment. I would love to have my guests introduce themselves. Can you please tell me who you are, what brought you to the game, and what you do with our fine Null Signal organization? Oh, and your pronouns.
Hi, Sanjay. Thanks. My name is David Withington. For people that have seen me online, I typically go by the handle Davidus, something like that. And I use he, him pronouns. I am the lead developer, game developer within Null Signal Games.
It's great to have you. I hear you came with gifts for us.
Oh, did I?
I think you're going to present maybe five cards for us.
That is correct. I am here to present five cards from the Automata Initiative, which is the first set of the Liberation Cycle. So, if it's all right with y'all, without further ado, the first card that I have to introduce is Eru Ayase Pessoa. Eru Ayase Pessoa is an Anarch Connection Clone Resource. So, two subtypes, Connection and Clone. Eru is unique, has an in-store cost of 2, an influence cost of 3, and has the ability click, take one tag, run archives. If successful, instead of breaching archives, breach R&D. Use this ability only once per turn. And has the additional ability threat 3 threshold. Whenever you breach R&D during a run on archives, access one additional card with a parenthetical text explaining threat. This ability is active if any player has 3 or more agenda points. So at the time of this recording, I suspect that someone else within Nelsignal Games, some good person, will have already put out an article around explaining what threat is as a new, hopefully evergreen mechanic for Netrunner being introduced in this cycle. But just as a primer / reminder, threat refers to cards which have a threat threshold, have additional abilities or unlocked added abilities after meeting a certain threat threshold. This threat threshold is met when either player has that number of agenda points. So in the case of Eru, the threat is 3. So once either player has 3 points on the table, Eru becomes supercharged.
And just to finish off reading the card, any chance you'd like to read the flavor text?
Oh yeah, sure. Luciana loved it when Mamai and Papai finished work early so they could all go home together. So, spoiler, but I believe Luciana is the child of Eru and Papai.
Yes.
Not yet been introduced.
Oh, you love to see it.
And I might take a moment to describe the card art for people who can't see it. It's Eru in a kind of purpley suit with a briefcase, holding the hand of a little girl, so Luciana, who has a backpack and a little pink bunny peeking out. And Luciana is also holding someone else's hand that you like is off screen. And they're walking through a sunlit street with it's a market. You can see fruits. You can see some of the people serving in the market with their aprons on, I guess. Some of them have cyber items attached to them, and it's a sunny day and kind of a happy mood.
There's some very good looking papayas, which I miss now that I live in the United States.
I should note as well, the art is terrific. Yes. And I'm very glad with your description that you mentioned the pink bunny. Crucial.
Now, one question that I want to ask you to clarify a little bit, because I actually have a lot of questions about threat and the numbers on this card specifically. Could you talk a little bit about what a developer is and what you do?
Excellent question that I probably should have addressed at the beginning, but I'm not great at this. So as a developer, my role within the organization is closely linked to, but distinct from, the design team. So for the production process of cards, at the beginning, the design team, typically in concert with the creative team's narrative, will form something of a setting, a story, a four cards for a new cycle, and design will, I guess, construct the blueprints for the mechanics that they want in a cycle, and at some stage a prototype will be given to development. So that's where my team comes in. So development, we are the iterators. We're the ones that see what was in the blueprints, potentially before it even goes to playtest, we'll say, hey, actually, we noticed this sort of structural flaw. I don't think this is going to pass. I don't know about this. A bit of back and forward, and then hopefully we get a architectural plan. I'm really stretching this metaphor here, but that we're happy with and that we think holds that we can give to playtesters. And then along the way, we'll iterate during the process.
So did this card have a lot of iterations through the playtesting process or through the development process?
Eru definitely is not what has changed substantively from, I guess, the earliest iterations of this card. I'm going to, as much as possible, try not to directly reference individual iterations. As will be discovered, as spoilers continue to come through, Anarch has something of a, I guess, sub-theme of tags in this cycle that in the very first iterations were present, but they inhabited a slightly different design space. So, yeah, nonetheless, Eru, in terms of the general premise, was always an archives pressure tool that was transitioned once threat was reached into becoming multi-axis as well.
A question about Eru and also threat, maybe design as a whole. Looking at the card, I think having this extra threat on archives in a classic Anarch way where you're hitting R&D because archives is open. We've seen that a little bit before, and this is a new take on it. And if the card didn't have a threat ability on it, you might compare it maybe even unfavorably to some cards we've seen before.
Omar.
Yeah, Omar is a great example. Yeah. Omar can hit HQ and R&D and doesn't take a tag. Now, taking a tag sometimes is not a downside. You might want it, depending on what the card pool is. But what is your target for what the card is in the non-threat version of the effect, and what is your target for the power level when you hit threat? And I guess that's complicated too, because you have a knob with the actual threat level. It seems very hard to do, and I'd love to hear how you approach that.
Yeah, so you are fully correct that it is difficult. My hope, of course, is that we have struck the right balance, that we have gotten to the right place in terms of the numbers on the card. So I would venture to say that if this card did not have a threat ability, if this card just didn't have the threat ability at all, even within the synergistic packages that this is intended for, which on release of the Automata Initiative set one, I suspect won't be fully developed, would be insufficient. Probably just wouldn't cut it. It's a inflexible Omar that also takes a tag. If your deck does not have some way, even if it has a way to mitigate tags, that's a big ask. That's a lot to ask for a card that has a non-trivial 2-play cost. And then you take the tag into account every time. That's if you're actually having to remove the tag. That's a very expensive way to get your accesses, even if they are through an ulterior route. If you put that threat ability, if you just made this, baked the threat ability into the card such that it was just at base, this was run archives, and when you breach, you access two cards. That is a very powerful card. That once the synergy, I guess, package is completed, you'd quickly realize, oh, that's when the tag actually potentially even does something good for you. That is a ridiculous amount of value that you can get off of this. So the threat is very much very intentional here. The threat value, so that's something that is going to become, I guess, apparent more as we continue seeing cards that have threat values, but generally speaking, we have tried to, for this cycle, I don't think conservative is the right word, we've tried to standardize threat values.
I'm just thinking, you're saying kind of threat, without threat it would be too boring a card, and if you just printed the text that comes after the threat, it would be too maybe strong. So is threat allowing you to have more nuance in the card?
Thanks for the follow-up. I'd say that the threat value is quite intentional for the cards that have them, such that they are not able to just apply whatever pressure it is off the bat from the very beginning of the game, where they may well be too overwhelming or, yeah, just potentially oppressive in terms of the pressure they can apply off the bat. But once the game reaches a certain threshold, a certain stage, for an effect like this is more okay. What I was going to note was that we've attempted to standardize threat values for this cycle. So threat 3 is the lower threat value that cards will have. So if a card has threat 3, potentially that's one agenda stolen or scored. So if it's a 3-pointer, as soon as that's happened, actually the second part of this card has activated. So in certain games, this can be really from very early on in the game, you can have this out, assuming that you go, oh, okay, we've got, someone is in the lead now. Someone's got reached that level. But it is nonetheless potentially quite early on where you'll hit this. Ultimately, there are lots of things that I'd love to talk about Edu in terms of synergies, but in some ways I'll say that she is a seed card. She is definitely hinting at more pieces. For those who might look and go, that seems like an extremely painful cost with the tag. On the surface, on her own, I suspect you would struggle to play her without at least some way to either mitigate or exploit the tag that she also has built into the ability.
Cool.
That's very cool. Thank you.
Should we look at the next card?
Absolutely. So the next card that we are looking at here is a Shaper card called Living Mural, which going to get there shortly, but the art is terrific. So the Living Mural is a 3-cost, 1MU program. It is an icebreaker, a killer, and a Trojan. So 3 subtypes. Living Mural has the text, install only on a piece of ice. Threat 4. When you install this program, it gets +3 strength for the remainder of the turn. This ability is active if any player has 4 or more agenda points. Interface. one credit to break one subroutine on a sentry protecting this server. One credit plus two strength. Living Mural is one strength at base and two influence.
Oh, can I please describe the art? I would love to.
Go ahead.
So this is art that takes place in cyberspace. I will note that this is by Adam S. Doyle, illustration heavyweight. And there is a mural. There's a bunch of graffiti on it. Very prominently in the front, you see Viva Livre Brasil. There might be a very subtle NSG there. But very prominently, there is a frog. And that frog is glowing out of, you know, bouncing out of the mural, attacking what seems to be an archer from the back. And that archer is going to have a tough time because this frog has got their number. I love this art.
It is great. I also notice a really nice detail. I see the text Fora Jinteki. I hope I'm not spoiling that too much because
that's cool.
Fora means out. So it's, just a bit of resistance.
Like Jinteki, get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to at some point find a full art, big art of this because it seems like the graffiti is, we're going to have to talk to somebody about who behind this art brief and talk to Adam S. Doyle about it. But let's talk about the card.
Yes. So Living Mural is a killer. So it breaks sentries. It is a part of a cycle. I'm actually not sure if I believe. No, I'm fairly well certain. And I suppose if I am incorrect, maybe this has to be edited out in post. But I'm fairly well certain that at the time of this recording, we will have already seen that there is an identity centered around Trojans. So that has to be kept in mind when evaluating Living Mural. So Living Mural is a Trojan icebreaker, which means that it is hosted on a piece of ice. So on the surface, this probably for those who are more familiar with the card pool, they'll see echoes of Ika here. I believe it's Ika, which is a killer icebreaker. Zero to install, and you pay two credits to host it on a piece of ice. And it breaks that piece of ice extremely efficiently. So it is more efficient at breaking than Living Mural is. The numbers are not identical because it's two credits for three strength. Living Mural, one credit for two strength, is those are exceptional numbers, but one credit to break one versus Ika's one credit to break two. Also, Ika costs zero to install. So, however, the substantive difference here is that Living Mural is also echoes something of a hybrid between Ika, aforementioned Ika, and Cyber Cipher. So Cyber Cipher is, in that Cyber Cipher is decoder that targets ice protecting the server. So Living Mural does not, unlike Ika, breaks sentries protecting the server Living Mural is hosted on. So you can have Living Mural hosted on, say, the third ice protecting a server, but actually it will be able to break all of the sentries protecting that server.
This card
Cyber Cypher is like it's rotated. Is Ika rotated by this stage or Ika is still available?
I believe Ika is Rain and Reverie.
Oh, right. Still available.
Yeah. Cyber Cypher, for those listening who aren't familiar with, it's a two to install decoder that costs very little. It has four strength and one to boost, one to break. So it breaks super efficiently. But when you install it, it can only work on one server. And so that's this parallel with Living Mural. It breaks all the sentries on that server.
So in as you noted, Ginevra, the comparison to Ika is inevitable. And that was actually one of the probably the trickiest parts during the development process, given the premise of the card as a like the basics of the design. The fundamentals were this is a killer icebreaker that's a Trojan. So already we have but we have that in the card pool, right? So some way, we have to be able to distinguish this. It doesn't necessarily have to be strictly better or strictly worse. Ideally, it shouldn't be, but it certainly has to, at the very least, carve its own niche. So a fair amount of iteration was done to achieve that. Ultimately, the decision was made to take the Cyber Cipher route of such that this affects all ice protecting the server, which I think was, I'm really glad that that was the route chosen, as that pretty solidly differentiates this from Ika. So we haven't mentioned anything about the thread ability thus far, though. So
I'm wondering what sort of playstyle, just thinking about it now, that means you kind of keep it in hand for a bit and hope for a threat fall?
So,
is that what people are doing or not really?
Let's just have a look.
I have to be honest with you. My eyes went over the threat. I was excited about the card without that.
Yeah. So at threat 4 on the turn you install this, so there's, I believe it's Penrose from Ashes. Mm-hmm. It's tough. I have a lot of playtest names in mind, but I think Penrose is actually correct. Was from
Penrose turns into a Fractor and a Decoder when you install
Yes. So on the turn you install it, actually in that case, the better comparison is Euler.
Gauss.
That's the one. Yeah. Yes.
Euler breaks for 0. Gauss gets strong.
Yes. Yes. That is correct. So Gauss again, Ashes. Is an icebreaker that on the turn you install it and gets +3 strength. So, however, Living Mural, you have to wait all the way until you get to threat 4 before you get that +3 strength. So, I think, should hopefully be obvious just based on the breaker numbers on this compared to Gauss. This is, despite the limitation of the server that you place this on, this is significantly more efficient than Gauss. In terms of 1 credit plus 2 strength is comically better than 2 credits. It's better than, it's twice as good as 1 credit plus 1 strength and is comically better than 2 credits plus 2 strength. On top of the fact that sentries can often be reasonably tricky to break. So Living Mural, even just at base, has, against certain sentries, has reasonable numbers. Whereas Gauss, very much at its base, aside from quite small barriers, is a fairly middling fractor. At threat 4, Living Mural becomes, on the turn it's installed, is it an extraordinarily efficient killer that breaks the vast majority of sentries that you might come across for, drastically more efficiently than most other killers will. So in terms of the deck you'll make this, as you noted, Ginevra, there is potentially the angle of, is this supposed to be something you hold on to? So I think there are a number of ways you can play this. One of them will involve having multiples of this. Early on, you may well need your killer, and this will do in a pinch. You have to lock it to a certain server, but it's reasonably efficient on the server that you're looking for. Later on, this becomes a really powerful, in a pinch, I need to get through the sentries in that server. This is going to do that at an extremely efficient rate. We will, as in the card pool, we also have both Simochip, once again from Ashes, as well as Rejig. So there are cards in the card pool that let you reinstall programs, which for something that has to be hosted on a specific piece of ice, that's a really valuable ability to be able to either reposition this, to reposition this, and furthermore, once you hit threat 4, that repositioning also activates the increased strength once again. So, yeah, very, very powerful. Once you hit, I guess, as noted again about the standardizing of the threat values, threat 4 is that intermediary threat value, which we've a lot, I'll say the majority, I believe I did look at it before a couple of times, but I don't know the exact numbers at this point, but threat 4 is the most common threat value, and I guess represents in many ways the mid-game. The game is afoot. The game is well underway at this point. Depending on the deck composition, it could be very close to over, but a lot of the time it's, okay, we're well underway. It may well be a couple more agendas stolen and scored on the either side before the game ends, but there's already been some tete-a-tete here. There's been back and forth. So, yeah, I think looking at this from the standpoint of trying to reset it, either to reinstall it via SimuChip or other tools, is the way you really want to get best use out of this. So this is very much one that once you hit threat 4, it really starts to sing. And again, if this were just like Gauss, if it had it off the bat, this would be a very, very threatening killer. So,
yeah. Much appreciated. What would you like to show us next?
So next on the cards, we have a Hasbiroid Sys-Op upgrade. So we have Volvo Ozechi. Forgive my pronunciation. I studied Portuguese and my wife is Brazilian, but I'm still not 100% confident that that is the correct pronunciation. I believe it is, though. Volvo, I am certain. So I may refer to him as Volvo throughout. So Volvo is HB Sys-Op upgrade. 1 to res, 2 to trash, 2 influence. The text reads, the res cost of each piece of ice protecting this server is lowered by 2 credits. Threat 4, the res cost of each card in the root of this server is lowered by 2 credits. This ability is active if any player has 4 or more agenda points. And lastly, this is not tied to the threat 4. When your turn ends, you may move this upgrade to the root of another server. Do one of y'all want to provide a brief description of the art?
And also, Volvo, that's like grandpa, isn't it?
Yes, grandpa. Affectionate term for.
So it's a elderly man, like quite stockily built, I would say. He's wearing, I feel, comfortable clothes, and part of him is maybe emerging into a cyberspacey, like kind of computery networky aspect, but part of him is kind of solid and in the real world. And he has a a mechanical cyborg. Is that what I'd say? Cyborg arm. And he's
a cybernetic arm.
Arm, and he's holding a mug which is steaming, and it says "Big Hug Mug." And I'd also like to point out that the illustrator. I think you're going to be better at saying the illustrator's name than me. So would you mind?
I believe the illustrator, that's probably João Queiroz.
That illustrator is, I know the art team has tried very hard to have some illustrators from Brazil, and that is one of the illustrators from Brazil.
I'll also say this art style is really cool. I love it. You get the, it's like a, not a style I think I've seen on a lot of Netrunner cards, and it works very well. And it's so good that, you know, I'm commenting on that rather than the fact that this person has a big hug mug, which is fantastic. Yeah. I love this effect. I love discounts. This card makes me really happy. I love paying less than I'm supposed to for things. And I love swippy swappy bouncing around. Oh, I'm over here. I'm over here. This card is very charming.
Yeah. This card has echoes of previous cards that have been printed. So the closest comparison here is Dedicated Technician Team, which is a card from Order in Chaos, which has since rotated out. This is drastically better than that card in virtually every single way. I've talked about this in a handful of other places, but I don't mind repeating it again. This is, power creep is one of those terms that understandably causes apprehension among players at times, as it suggests things around pay to win models and exploitative corporations that make you buy the new flashy stuff because it's just better than the old stuff. For what it's worth, Dedicated Technician Team was a card that saw virtually no play. Even casually, it was one that I know that at times I tried to make it work, and then I went, wait, why does this have a one trash cost? Dedicated Technician Team had two recurring credits to install ice, whereas Ozechi is two credits lowering the res cost. Oh, which reminds me that this is also similar to Akitaro Watanabe, which was some serious OG stuff. Now I'm showing my hand here, showing my age.
It is important because, you know, Akitaro Watanabe doesn't get many more opportunities to be mentioned.
Unorthodox man that he is. Yes.
Yeah.
A sysop from the original corset, who had the same res cost of ice protecting the server's lord by two, was in Jinteki, and the trash cost was one higher. So notably, Volvo has significantly improved flexibility with the fact that literally he can move. When your turn ends, you can move him to the root of another server. So either once you've already protected, rezzed an ice to, say, stop a runner coming through, and you predict, okay, next turn I suspect the runner's going to pivot over to R&D. I'm going to get my discounts there. On top, as well, in terms of flexibility, once you hit threat 4, Volvo becomes extremely strong as an econ tool, serving as a Breaker Bay grid light, which, again, FFG era card. This is lowered the res cost of cards in the root of a server by 5. However, was a region upgrade, thus could not move, and Volvo has this dual functionality that at the baseline, this is still, again, very intentional. This is being power crept compared to earlier designs that we've seen in a similar space where those cards simply didn't see play. This is very much not an attempt to, say, buy our cards because you have to be competitive. It's these cards have since rotated, and these effects we realized at the time in hindsight probably were not at the level that they needed to be. So we've pushed them a reasonable amount more. I note, so I guess a significant aspect is the moving we will, I am okay venturing to say this, it's possibly been mentioned already in another space, an article or elsewhere, the Vovo is part of a cycle. So all of the corporations get a server hopping sysop, all of which are pretty neat, with pretty impressive effects. I'm pretty pleased where all of them have come to, and really glad that such beautiful art is being used to herald this card.
It sounds like my Ampere deck is going to be so obnoxious. I'm going to be moving so many things around all the time. It's going to be amazing. I'm really excited about this. I think a few of cards that I've loved in the past have gotten this treatment where, like, hey, this card was bad and nobody played it. I mean, just thinking of like Matrix Analyzer from the original core set, got remade into Vasilisa, and Vasilisa is really cool. I've been putting it in some decks and it's lovely, and I'm really excited to try this guy out because I actually really like Takatara Watanabe.
Did Volvo cause any development challenges, or was it kind of a not many iterations, lots of iterations? How did it kind of go?
Good question. So Volvo was a card that had quite a few numerical tweaks along the way. I'm sure that Rezcost has changed at least twice, as has the trash cost. Volvo was always part of a cycle of the server hopping upgrade, so that was always built into the design. And I believe out of all the server hoppers, Volvo is the only one that has retained its core ability in the Akatado functionality, which for what it's worth was, while we may have changed, this is, again, in terms of color pie, moving this into HB is potentially something that feels like a violation of color pie. For what it's worth, again, even to refer back to ye old core set, the original core set also had Experiential Data, another very bad card, but that reduced the res costs of, I believe it's card, sorry, no, increased the strength of cards in the server. So very much a, like, bolstering ice in a server, very much intended to be a part of the design of a variety of corps. That's, this is one of the few designs that stayed reasonably similar throughout the process. The threat ability saw some tweaks to it. I think the first iteration, this was not actually a threat card. And it was recognized that actually, as you get, I think the threat here is interesting because as you get further into the game, you will have a number of your ice already rezzed, so the value of this card becomes actually, it's harder, significantly harder to get value from this card, and thus it's more difficult to justify installing and rezzing later on. If you find this later on, you think, oh, I'm not sure if this is worth it anymore. So the additional discount here really adds to that, either for campaigns you might have or other upgrades, making them cheaper.
One thing this card makes me think of is that this is the first corp card that we've been talking about that has a threat. And of course, the runner doesn't have much control over what agendas they're seeing off the top of the deck, but the corp does. Had you seen corps modify their agenda complement because of trying to hit individual thresholds of threat?
Very much so. Particularly in terms, so between threat 3 and threat 4, as you can well imagine, with threat 3 being potentially activated after a single agenda is stolen or scored, threat 4, aside from no longer legal shenanigans with the likes of government takeover and Vanity Project, that's going to require two agendas in someone's score area, at least. So again, very much midway through the game. And as you noted, unlike the runner, the corp actually is the one that like has the agency over the agenda composition of their deck. Hence, you during the playtest process, you very much had decks that if they move to, hey, I'm wanting to make use of this card now, okay, I probably have to modify this agenda suite accordingly because in order to more comfortably hit this threat threshold, either through potentially your deck is trying to rush out just 2-point agendas early and then so as to bolster your threat cards, or recognize actually maybe I let a few slip early on to accelerate that mid game into the mid game where I have bolstered these cards. So
what would be the next card that you'd like to look at?
Yes, so the next card, I suspect, and by suspect I think I'll pretty confident that this is going to be the most controversial card that we talk about here today, is called Oppo Research. Oppo Research is a 2-to-play NBN operation. It is Terminal and Grey Ops. Grey Ops is a flavor subtype with, aside from earlier rotated cards, has currently no mechanical implications. However, Terminal is met out in the text itself and the mechanics itself. So Terminal refers to the fact that the card text contains, after you resolve this operation, your action phase ends. So play only if the runner stole or trashed a corp card during their last turn. Give the runner 2 tags. It has a threat 3 threshold, which says you may pay 5 credits to give the runner 2 tags. This ability is active if any player has 3 or more agenda points. It is 2 influence.
I can describe the art if you like. So this is looks like a street seating at a cafe or a pub or restaurant or something like that. There is a fanged person at a table, I believe, Lou. Not positive. That's a very bright, in a very bright shirt, enjoying the company of another individual who has some cool ears and an eye patch and a ripped bod. And there's some people in the background, but also there is behind them, behind some glass, someone who's clearly keeping an eye out on what Lou is doing. Oh, I'm just seeing in the background, it says codename Lou. So yeah, people are doing research on Lou, finding out what my favorite wolf is up to.
There's kind of like an overlay, like you'd see on a screen, like a circle around Lou and Lou's friend, and like there's latitude and longitude, and like there's people kind of glancing towards Lou, but I don't think Lou realizes this at the moment.
I think Lou is having a really good time. I don't think Lou is interested in noticing what people are doing around him.
They're looking at a cat video, is that right?
I do see a cat. I don't know if it's a video specifically about cats.
Oh, well, a cat, or them, cat picture.
If it is, but yeah. So this is, this is a tagging card.
This calls back a bunch of cards.
As you say, this is very much a callback to a number of cards. So this card is being released, and I would say could only be released in a world where the most, probably the closest analog here, hard-hitting news. Love it or hate it. and there's plenty of that, depending on which side, corp or runner, you play more often. Hugely meta-defining cards that, I mean, game-warping card, really. It defines something of the game environment. Mm. If you're playing against NBN, you absolutely have to be aware that Hard-Hitting News is a card. And most inexperienced or beginner players, their first experience of Hard-Hitting News is very unpleasant, where they realize, oh, that hurts. Oh, 4. That is a very large number of tags that is going to be very unpleasant to try to remove all of them. And turns out that very bad things can happen if you can't. So this card is very much a callback to Hard-Hitting News in a lot of ways. But there are very intentional differences here that are key to the design, certainly not by accident. So notably, the condition of Hard-Hitting News, also a terminal, was play only if the runner made a run. So made a run, they could have gone anywhere. They could have even just done a probing run, run on archives for a dirty laundry.
Even if they think of, a run, you can play it. Yeah.
If it enters their consciousness, even briefly. So they can run and jack out. The run does not have to be successful. And then, oh, well, you activated my
trap card.
Operation. Yeah, you activated my trap card operation that is very, very nasty. So this already, this condition is significantly more, asks more to be met. It's not even just a successful run, but actually requires a card to be stolen or trashed. So the trashed aspect is, stolen or trashed is a design space that I really like. I think it's, so in the, was it? It was Katara, yeah. The Katara cycle, they had something of the, there is a subtype of operations called Reprisal, which had the condition, play only if the runner trashed a corp card. I like a lot of those cards in theory, but I also know that that condition can at times feel just that little bit too narrow. So we did want to extend that slightly. So this, the runner stole or trashed, is something of a hybrid between the Reprisal mechanic from Katara, as well as an early designs, the likes of mid-season replacements, and even more current ones, such as Punitive Counter-Strike in System Update. So this, the run not only has to be successful, but a card needs to be trashed or stolen. So give the runner 2 tags. Unlike Hard-Hitting News, this does not require a trace. So there's no paying your way out of this. As a runner, you have to take those tags. Furthermore, once threat 3 is hit, this becomes really, really nasty. Assuming the corp is willing to pay a significant amount more money, but the tempo that they are going to hit you with on the runner side is absolutely brutal. So again, just with the comparison to Hard-Hitting News, it is very intentional here. I think for all the cards that have threat on them, this is one of the most important cards to have threat on them, and was pretty crucial during the, even in the earliest prototypes, this card, I don't believe, had threat attached to it exactly, but it fundamentally did. It touched something on agenda points. So this is a card. Hard-Hitting News, again, love it or hate it. Meta-defining, game-warping card. But an important card, a very important card for NBN to both showcase in terms of mechanically. This is what NBN does. NBN is the most tag oriented of the corps. For what it's worth, we are trying to move that space a little bit where each corp has access to both tagging tools as well as tag punishment. But NBN, it is most squarely in their wheelhouse. They excel at it. And so it was fitting that the, I guess, spiritual successor to Hard Aiming News was given to NBN. But again, I think one, as much as I see Hard-Hitting News as a important card, the most unpleasant aspect of that card, and what I would say is the most clearly unfair feeling part of the card, is the how easy it is to meet the condition, and the fact there is this can activate from the runner's first turn. The runner ran first turn. Do you have this card in hand? You can use it. Oppo Research. You can also use this after the runner runs on their first turn, assuming they stole or trashed something. So there's a level of interaction required significantly greater than Hard-Hitting News did. And furthermore, more significantly, for the really potent aspect of this card to be unlocked, the game needs to be afoot. If neither side has points on the table, you are giving them two tags, which, while requires effort on the runner's part to untangle, is not nearly as totalizing as as requiring of immediate, okay, you have turned my game state into a I need to address this right now. Very intentional that that aspect is gated behind threat. Also very intentional in that way, the threat component of this, that number of the credits you pay as the corp to give the additional tags, while it changed at times, it was always important that this cost more than the baseline effect due to how obviously how much more impactful it is to give the runner four tags versus two. Time will tell whether we landed in the right space for this card. It is a very important thing for this type of design to exist, as much as, again, on the runner side, it can certainly feel just slightly soul-destroying to have it played against you when you're not prepared for it. But at the very least, we hope that this design gives you more opportunities to be prepared for it while not defanging it. It is important that this is a tool that is corps can play to provide significant pressure, as well as for follow-up for other tools at the corps' disposal to punish tags.
And I'm guessing that this took quite a lot of effort and time to get this to the position you want it to be in.
Absolutely. This was a card that fundamentally was always going to be, I think the design brief of this card was multi-tag operation. That was about it. But the number of iterations this card went through is it's up there, despite the fact that the fundamental premise of the card as a multi-tagging operation never changed. It was always that from the beginning. It's just so much changed in terms of getting the refinement of the numbers as well as the precise mechanics. So there were iterations, not of this exact card, but of iterations of this design which weren't terminal and thus had to provide the runner with some way that they could prevent it, typically through paying some amount to prevent that number of tags. Those designs ended up both more text heavy and more I would say, more involved in terms of the comprehension required, as well as the fact that I think it was realized that the terminal component of hard-hitting news is, I think I would say, a good part of the design.
Yeah, it's the fact that
you cannot follow it up immediately. It gives the runner that out, because they, to be able to immediately follow up multiple tags is probably something, I'll say, that unless there is active setup on the corpse end, such as through them having a tomorrow's headline in a remote, pre-advanced, I would say there should be more requirement for the corp to land multiple tags and be able to use those on the turn it's played. So I think the terminal we landed in the end was the correct decision.
Yeah, I think you've preserved the most reasonable part of hard-hitting news, is that, hey, you know, I'm giving you a turn. You have four clicks. I've given you just four tags. You have the basic action. That's the reasonable part of hard-hitting news. There's some unreasonable parts about it, but that's the fairest part of it.
So, yeah, so notably, that threat number was also, again, we wanted to standardize threat. We landed at threat 3. There were iterations of this at threat 4. And there were a handful of iterations, possibly just one, where it was threat 2. For this cycle, we have threat 2 has been removed.
I can see Sanchez's face for threat 2.
Yeah, threat 2 has been removed entirely, with threat 3 being the lowest. There were other cards where I still have a little bit of, oh, threat 2 for that would be nice. This was one where we went, it was closer to being threat 4 than it was threat 2. We ended up landing on threat 3 with making the determination that actually if a 3-pointer is scored or stolen, maybe that should be the threshold that is required for this to activate the particularly punishing effect. I will readily acknowledge that this, in concert with Bologna, is a
strong.
Don't take it. Leave my Bologna alone. I'm a corporation. I'm in business.
I'm not in the SBT. So I can't comment further. But I suspect that is going to be a very strong interaction.
I mean, I'm a corporation. I'm trying to get stuff done. You're coming in, taking my agendas, destroying my assets, destroying my operations, and you're telling me I can't just, I'm a, also a news corporation, I can't put you on blast? Come on. This is so fair.
And what's a tag or two between friends? Come.
Yeah. Yeah. You know where I am. I'll take my corporate hat off now. All right.
We have now, is it one last card?
This is the last card, isn't it? So this last card was given as a freebie from Manverupt from the community team, which was very nice of him to do. This card is not a threat card, but is nonetheless a pretty exciting card. That another one that went through quite a few iterations, and you'll see why soon. So the final card that I have to share is called Bahia Bands. Bahia Bands is a neutral run event that costs 2 and notably has 1 influence. So neutral with 1 influence, meaning you always have to pay influence to play this, unless you are the catalyst. So the text on Bahia Bands reads, run any server. If successful, resolve 2 of the following in any order, following which there are 4 bullet points, 4 options. First, draw 2 cards. Second, install 1 card from your grip, paying 1 credit less. Third, remove 1 tag. Fourth, place 4 credits on this event. You can spend hosted credits to pay trash costs for the remainder of this run. So this is a big ol' modal neutral run event that costs influence.
Oh, if I can interrupt with the art description.
Please do.
So this is a picture. It's a close-up of some hands that are tying some colorful ribbon onto what looks like a wall of ribbon. I believe this is referencing a cultural tradition that I'm looking up now of Bahia bands, which are actually, is someone else able to speak them more expertise? Yeah.
It's kind of like a prayer or a wish, and the colors of the bands, or I think they're sometimes called bonfim ribbons as well. And they have that wording that you can see bits of wording on the ribbons that they're tying, particularly around a specific church. So those ribbons are kind of prayers or wishes. And the green was chosen because, from what I could research, it was, like about renewal or, kind of giving growth and life. And I felt that, like the actions of drawing cards, or you're kind of renewing, refreshing yourself as a runner and getting ready for the next stage.
And even so, the different colors represent different kinds of wishes.
Yeah.
And it's a modal card. So you have all these different kinds of wishes you can make. Oh, that's beautiful. This is lovely. I'll also say, if we're going to make a Deuces Wild comparison, the art,
which was going to be the point, yes.
The hands are sleeved, for what it's worth. I know that's a anyway.
Also, I'll leave people to think about why those sleeve colors were chosen.
Oh, cool.
Dang. But yeah, the Sanjay hit the nail on the head with the Deuces Wild comparison. Hmm. This is not strictly meant to be reprint of Deuces Wild at all. I guess as well, not even in the same way that Oppo Research is very much intended to replace that design space. Bahia Bands is, it's intended to be a notable modal card that has a lot of functionality to it that, as a result, made sense that this has an influence cost, as provides a lot of value, both depending on any given matchup, as well as depending on what your deck is aiming to do. So the exact effects on this card changed a lot throughout the process. This is one that, as you can imagine, it's got 4 different modes, and you resolve 2 of them. It was important to get the fine-tuning on this right. So precisely what each of these did changed numerous times throughout the course of the development cycle. Nonetheless, the two that were always present, I believe these are unchanged, were draw 2 cards and remove 1 tag. So those, as well as tying it to a run. So unlike Deuces Wild, this was always meant to be like daily laundry deuces. This was always meant to be tied to a run, i.e. to add a degree of interactivity to it. As well as also that, depending on the matchup, it's quite easy to make a successful run, but some degree of risk attached to it. Remove 1 tag was very important to this, as will become more apparent but throughout the cycle. But 3 of the 5 cards discussed today reference tags. So this is a cycle that, interestingly, more so throughout the process, in early drafts, the earliest prototypes, tagging was still present, as it always is, it being a pretty bread and butter fundamental mechanic within Netrunner. But as the cycle developed, it became more clear that this is really an angle that we were trying to lean more into. I suspect in some ways, given that this is with the fact that it will become more apparent with Flashpoint's rotation, there are a lot of tag-related designs in Flashpoint, some very important ones. So with the rotation of that cycle, there it opens up. It opened up a whole large amount of space for both revisiting of design space as well as new design spaces, new ways to address that tag design space. So the other modes, draw two cards, I mean, very sort of, it's value, it's good, drawing cards is good, it's a card game. The other two, installing a card from your grip, paying a credit less, and placing four credits on the event to trash cards, those had a number of different iterations, exactly what discount was provided, what the credits could be used for. There were certainly versions that floated and toyed with the idea around those credits just being usable in the same way they are for Fencer Fueno, which you can use those credits to pay for
Bologna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We landed at the trash cost only.
Yeah. This card looks really fun. I think one thing about Deuces Wild that was always, I think people who are very good at the game told me, like, yeah, if you're just always drawing two cards and gaining a credit, like, you're not getting the full fun of the card. And I feel like this card is like, you're going to have some fun with it.
Yeah, it is again, that there is that comparison there to Deuces Wild, very intentional. But there were iterations that had just a pure econ mode that was just gain money, and I think we realized actually that is the least interesting aspect to the card. For that money to be tied into a specific purpose, it makes it more compelling and makes the design itself more compelling as well as more interactive for both players. So
thank you for showing all of these cards. What I wanted to do was kind of just finish off with asking a little bit about the development process of the Automata initiative generally. Was it similar to previous development processes, or is it a bit different? Do you draw kind of things that you learn from each of, like, are there things that come from one cycle and you go, okay, next time we do a development process, we're going to focus on something? What was it like, this development process?
Great question. So every cycle is different in its own way. It's a truism, but it's a valid truism. They're both in terms of challenges presented as well as opportunities. So we learned a lot from Borealis, both in terms of the design dev process, as well as like seeing it in the wild, being able to see which designs really resonated with people. Some of them were familiar feelings where within dev and within playtest it was I'm glad that people love this card, we love this card too, and others were, it's not exactly the reception that we expected, or actually we didn't quite land on what we were looking for here, didn't quite hit the mark. So we're always hoping that each subsequent cycle is better than the first. This is one where, the process of the liberation cycle development process at times had stop and start elements to it, which proved challenging for many teams, development very much included. But as we, I guess, through various transitional periods, I think we landed in our final iteration. I think even the final, say, 3 months of the development cycle for the Automata initiative were really, really pivotal, really key, were some of the most dedicated testing of, hey, we've toyed with these designs, we've tried this, back to the drawing board, tried this, another angle, eventually refining and landing on, okay, I'm pretty sure this is right, but you know what? Now we really need to get those numbers right. I think we landed on the mechanics, but now we got to get the numbers right. The final few months for Automata initiative testing were really, really key. I'm very happy with the end result, with what we've come to for the set. There are certainly, as always going to be the case, compromises that had to be made for, oh, I really wish this could have been in set one. So that's, I guess, something even more to look forward to, even once the whole set is out. I'm really glad with the end result of where we got to with set one. I think there are a lot of cards in there, a lot of fresh designs to appeal to a wide range of different play styles, different players. So I'm excited in much the same way that I imagine many of y'all are.
Well, thank you so much for coming on with us. And thank you for all the work that you put in towards the set, because I am really excited about it.
So much work, I think. So much work.
Thank you. It takes its toll, like every department. But as you can imagine, the closer you get to crunch, oh boy, you're really, really just grinding out those games. And absolutely hats off to both everyone within my team. I know how hard they worked, and within the org, but to the playtesters as well. It's not, they're the unsung heroes in terms of the amount of work they put in through a cycle that saw quite a few reworks and a lot of iteration, a longer iteration cycle than we're used to. That can be demoralizing. I felt that myself, but for the playtesters to really push through, even all the way through until the end, I'm extremely grateful, and that this set would be not even close to as good as it is, as polished as it is, without their dedication. So, yeah, massive props to the playtest crew, massive props to everyone within No Signal Games. We done did good.
That was a really great interview with David. It was also really long, so we're not going to have our regular segments in, but I would just like to remind you about some newsy things. If you are wanting to play these new cards, you actually have an opportunity really, really soon with the Asia Pacific Continental Championships. So the Automata Initiative cards are legal for this. And please do check. Data and Destiny and Flashpoint Cycle are rotated. The APAC Continentals are in the standard format. Registration ends on August the 4th, but please do check time zones, because this may be actually it may be the previous day for you, because I know living in Australia, we're kind of a day ahead, and that's these time zones are in Western Australian time. So double check it, but the registration closes August the 4th. The Swiss rounds are on August the 5th, and the top cut will be on August the 6th. And I think it will be really, really exciting to see what people have quickly brewed up, because they haven't had long to look at these cards. So it will be really amazing. And it's online, so wherever you are in the world, you could stay up late, get up early, or be in the right time zone to play this. The other thing is, for this year, it's different. You are allowed to play in multiple continental championships. So even if you're like, no, no, I'm going to the one in the Americas, or no, no, I'm going to Europe and Middle East one and Africa one, that's fine. You can go to all of them if you want. The Americas one is in person, though, so you have to be in that location. The other two are online. So, yeah, come and enjoy the APAC Continentals with us, as well as other Continentals if you are in another location. And I think we're wrapping up now, so I would love to say goodbye. I hope you've really enjoyed the episode and all of the things that we learned from David about the development process and all of these really cool new cards. I'll say goodbye.
And I will also say goodbye. I look forward to hearing your thoughts, your takes, and seeing you online and in person. Goodbye.